and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by NetFence Radio, the political podcast by informed millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-winged perspective. It is Friday, July 15th, 2016, another very busy day in the news. We're going to get to all the news of the world in the second half, but for the first half, we're going to get a little local Colorado politics intensive because we have back with us Mrs. Daphna Michelson-Janay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got that
correct.
Right.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yay.
Who is, of course, running for House Seat 30 in Adams County.
Near and dear to our hearts.
Yes.
She's running against the vile Joanne Windholtz, as we talk about often, and has agreed to come back and talk to us today.
Yes. Of course, I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Data.
And I'm Daphna.
Daphna is here along with her husband.
And I'm Michael.
Very glad. And we have also a special treat for you guys. My dear friend Jeremiah, whose music I often play in the in between segments and who you've asked about is here. And he's going to do sort of a live performance for us.
Yeah, in the middle.
In the middle. So
yes.
Maybe at the end, too. But anyway, let's talk about Daphna's campaign. We are really, really excited for it. Things are going pretty well. Good grassroots efforts starting here. And you just want to talk to us about how it's been going and where it's going and what comes next?
Absolutely. We've been spending a lot of our days in very high heat, knocking on doors, just trying to reach voters at home where I can introduce myself or our volunteers can introduce me to the potential voters so that they start to get an idea of who's going to be on their ballot in November. We're getting pretty warm response at the doors. People are very friendly and interested. But it's been fascinating to hear from people who, A, are not interested in voting this election cycle because of their distress at the top of the ballot, or people who, you know, we as we get to the doors and realize all of what's going on in their life. I mean, you learn a lot when you go to somebody's door. When they open that door, you learn what their reality is. And for many of them, politics is far, far, far from their mind.
And yeah.
That's something important to remember, too. You know, we get after people a lot on this podcast for not voting and not being engaged. And we really try to make sure that people know, like we talked about, even if they're not going to vote for the president, you hate Hillary, you hate Trump, that's okay with me. Don't vote for president, but vote down ballot. Vote for all the Democrats in all your state and local elections. That's going to make the biggest difference in your life, and that vote's going to count the most. But it's important to remember that, yeah, people have complex lives, and poverty impacts a lot of them, mm-hmm. and sometimes this whole political machine that we are junkies for doesn't necessarily enter into their reality.
Right, and we have a great density of poverty in House District 30, and that's a lot of the doors that we've been hitting right now, so their reality is not about politics right now.
Right.
But when I get to the door and they do answer, it's an opportunity to be able to say, okay, so what are some of the challenges that you're facing and how might we support you in solving those challenges? And quite frankly, a lot of what I get back is sometimes they're municipal, so mm-hmm. I need to connect right. them with a city councilor. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're federal, in which case, let you know who your congresspeople are. And every once in a while, we get to that magic sweet spot where I say, yes, this is a state issue, and let's start talking about what legislation looks like to solve this challenge. Or obviously, we look at all of the different pathways, but to be able to say there is something that we can do, that's a beautiful thing.
Well, let's talk about specifically some of those state issues, because after all, this is an issues-oriented campaign.
Absolutely.
And that's what we care about, and that's how we get people out to vote and get people interested. So what are some of the state issues specific to your district that you are passionate about and that you are campaigning on?
A very big one is access to mental health care. In Adams County, I will say Community Reach has been doing an amazing job with very few resources. And getting especially if you are a Medicaid recipient, getting your behavioral Absolutely. Health care treatment paid for is a really big challenge. In our district sits Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
And if you are a Medicaid recipient and you do not have Denver county, Medicaid, you cannot get behavioral health care outpatient treatment at Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Children's Hospital is in Adams County.
Well, and that's the place where it should start.
Absolutely. And across the street from Children's Hospital is Arapahoe County. Colfax is the border. If you have Arapahoe County Medicaid, you cannot get behavioral health care treatment. Now, if you go to the emergency department at Children's, you get treatment. If you, no matter what your Medicaid, and I don't want to prevent anyone from going to Children's Hospital to seek treatment because it is the absolute best treatment you can get. They're not going to turn you away.
Well, and Children's is renowned. I mean, they're incredible.
World renowned. Yeah. I mean, really, people come from everywhere for treatment. And we can tell you from our own family experience, the behavioral health care that your children can get at Children's Hospital is second to none. And I want to see more kids being able to access that.
Yeah.
And it's not only the youth. We also, right there on that Anschutz campus, and it's very controversial, so I shouldn't even bring it up, but is the going to be the new VA.
Yes.
Veterans yes. suicide rates are, it's unconscionable mm-hmm. that we have people coming back from service and we are not able to do enough to prevent their suicides.
Yeah.
It's devastating.
And sadly, that became a political pissing contest when it went over budget. And then
sure.
the budget hawk swooped in and said, well, this is costing too much money. It's like this.
Budget
but
hawks
I was very excited.
That want to support our troops and that are pro-military.
And can't stand all the horrible waiting times.
Yes, but we should defund the VA. That's a great idea.
I was very excited to find out that, you know, despite the budgetary problems, they're pressing forward and it's going to be completed.
Yes.
No matter the cost. Well, not no matter the cost. That might be going too far. But with the current projections, they're going to move forward, which is very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. And I think I mentioned this before. I actually used to work in that very field, linking people in Arapahoe, Douglas, and Adams County with behavioral health Medicaid services,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't even aware of that issue with the county border and Children's. So, what sort of legislation are you proposing, and that you would work on to remedy that?
So, for us to remedy that, it's actually going to take place partially on a federal level, but what it'll take is a coalition of people pushing for it. And in a legislative position, I can push for it. So while I may not be able to write a law that grants access to Denver Medicaid, as a legislator, I have a seat at the table to start pushing for access, for greater access. And, you know, look, when you start meeting, and I've had several meetings with Children's Hospital because it's a very big passion area of mine, and it's in my district. When you start talking about how do we bring more access, they start talking about reimbursement rates,
yeah.
right?
Which are incredibly low. I learned today, and I might butcher this, so forgive me as a first-time candidate if I get this language wrong. Autism is not a covered benefit unless it is co-occurring with mental health.
No, that's right.
On Medicaid.
Yeah.
That's what? Ridiculous.
And autism has a higher prevalence in Colorado by a couple of percentage points than the rest of the country.
Yes, that's true.
And that might actually be a federal issue, because when I worked in mental health in Texas, we had a lot of those same issues. So you would have a lot of child psychiatrists diagnosing things
right.
like bipolar disorder and ADHD just to get them into that treatment.
Just to get them access.
And the special services of the schools and whatnot.
So interestingly, Montana and Kansas apparently have passed some pretty good bills to fix that.
Kansas of all places.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
Montana and Kansas. So this is one of the new areas that I'm specifically studying. So as we pull that legislation from Montana and Kansas and look at what we have here, and if there is a possibility, I mean, The thing about legislation is it's a very creative process. You know, let's figure out what the problem is
yes.
and see all of the different possible avenues for solution. And legislation is but one avenue. So where are the ways that we can make those fixes? Because we know that we have a significant level of autism here in Colorado.
Absolutely.
And if we are penalizing our kids of need, that's not okay.
And back to the previous point that you were making, you know, even if you can't specifically write a law, who else in this country is going to know about that specific hospital with that specific street and the county designation, we don't have a representative other than someone from House District 30 to go to the feds and to do what needs to be done to fix this problem other than you. So even if there's not a law you can write at the state level, you are maybe the only person that has a seat at the table that has any vested interest in this issue. And that's another reason to vote down ballot.
Absolutely.
and not only that, when federal dollars do become available, we need to make sure that we've got people at the table who are not going to reject them, like we've seen in several of the states with the Obamacare situation, where people have said, yes, we understand that the federal government is offering millions of dollars, but we would like to not accept it for political gain,
mm-hmm. right.
or on political grounds, at least.
Which a lot of them finally gave in on.
No, a lot of them have gave in, and a lot of them paid a lot of political cost for it, too, because people don't really understand. What we need is people on the ground and people in state government who can explain, yes, we're going to take this money because here's how it helps you.
Yeah.
So another area, and I don't want to be considered a one-issue candidate, but another area that we are looking at as far as mental health and access to care is concerned is our incarcerated youth. So I have volunteered at Betty Marler Juvenile Detention Facility and Ridgeview Academy. My husband has as well. And Ridgeview is for boys and Betty Marler is for girls. Mm. And when you work with these kids, and I highly recommend, we volunteer through Junior Achievement there. If you want to make a significant impact, I highly recommend volunteering through Junior Achievement, Goodwill. These are places that give you access to kids who desperately need the interaction with adults who care and can help them see that there's a positive pathway for their life.
Right.
When I had the opportunity to go in with Junior Achievement, I could look at these kids and see a lot of similarities with our children. Our youngest son is twice exceptional. So he's exceptionally gifted and he has an exceptional learning disability.
Wow.
And I fought up and down our system to get him an individualized education plan that met his needs with no success. I have access, I have knowledge, I have connections, and I could not get him the IEP he needed. And then I went and volunteered at Betty Marler in particular. I had a long-term volunteer engagement with Betty Marler, and I watched as IEP needs were not being met. And I could see the brilliance of the kids and the disabilities of the kids. And we know that 80% of our boys and 90% of our girls are victims prior to becoming felons.
Yes.
So what are we doing to protect them? And I look at these kids and I feel like it's my fault that they're in prison. And from a mental health perspective, we are dealing with depression. We are dealing with anxiety. We are dealing with all sorts of challenges that create the pathway for the kids to be victimized and to get there. So what can we do as a community to stop that, what some refer to as a pipeline, right? The school to prison
yes.
pipeline.
Absolutely. Yes.
And one of the things that we've been investigating and really trying, and by we, I have, you know, my partner in crime over here, Michael, we have been trying to put the dollars behind it because you don't get anything through if you can't figure out where the dollars are going to come
sure.
from, right?
Yes.
But what I would love to see in the ideal world is a social worker for every grade level for K through 5 or K through 8 in the ideal world, where these social workers work in the classroom in tandem with the teacher, tying social skills with reading skills. So we are taught to read from kindergarten to third grade. We read to learn from third to fifth grade. That's how we determine if we have set up our kids to be able to learn. Social skills can also be taught from kindergarten through third grade and practiced from third through fifth grade so that by the time they're getting into sixth grade, they can self-regulate, they can identify the challenges they're facing, they can learn that we are in a classroom where we have kids on every range of the spectrum. And,
right.
you know, when we talk about autism, our kids are going undiagnosed, they're in the classrooms, teachers are expected to be able to manage this wide range of learning abilities, but we aren't giving the kids the skills they need to be able to say, I need help, I have a challenge. The teacher doesn't have time to be able to point out every single kid who has a word processing disorder. Boys have huge levels of word processing disorders that show up early on in education. Girls are able to hide them for years, and sometimes their problems don't show up until middle school.
And we just say they're bad at math or...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But you put a person who is trained at looking for these disabilities, trained at training the kids how to have those social skills, how to self-regulate, how to handle their own challenges on the playground. We're going to return classroom hours to the school. We're going to get healthy kids through school, and we're going to give them the ability to handle what's coming at them in the world by the time they get to middle school. You identify a mental health challenge in the early years, there's a chance it doesn't explode by the time they get to middle school.
Well, and
doesn't this decrease the incarceration rate overall?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which would save lots of money for the state.
So that we can pay for social workers.
Exactly.
To be in every classroom.
Exactly.
Well, hearing you talk about that makes me think about, you know, what some of the, you know, top 50 companies in the state, like why they're rated the best places to work, is a lot of times the highest ranking thing on their list is things like employee services or human resources. And we really don't have those in schools. I mean, even thinking back to where I went, which is Poudre School District in Fort Collins, which is ranked as a very high-ranking school in Colorado,
yep.
The only things you really ever were sent to see anybody in, a counselor, mm-hmm. or principal or anything, the only reason you did that is for disciplinary issues. You didn't go for assistance. You didn't go for help. I mean, even when we had lunch programs, even a lot of times those were fraught with issues of just trying to get access. And like, that's a simple one.
Well, we often look at the solution to any of these challenges as discipline challenges.
Right.
And I remember when my son was in fifth grade, when they finally said, maybe this isn't a discipline problem.
Right.
Right.
Well, your brother Emmett, Rachel.
Yes.
He was.
He really struggled in school. He really, really had a hard time. And we had a teacher when he was in third grade say that he had an anger problem, or that he may have been depressed because when she got in his face to yell at him, he didn't cry. Which is like, wait, did you just seriously say that you got in his face and yelled at him? First of all.
That's devastating.
And so he was unfocused and he had a really hard time. And what was undiagnosed was actually that he had an eye problem. And so he had to get so close up to the page because his two eyes were focusing differently. And so he had to get so close to the page that reading was painful and he couldn't do it. And he didn't want to lean down in a classroom and stare at the page. And so he just decided not to.
And he couldn't read chalkboards at all
because his two eyes were focusing differently. Yeah. And so what my parents did is they got him a set of glasses and he went to some basically physical therapy for your eyes for about a year. And he's perfectly fine.
Oh.
But yeah, they tried to put him on...
But to hear that entire
ADD
group of people,
medication,
yeah.
Because they thought he might have ADD because he was fidgety in class and he was unfocused. I mean, the number of things they just sort of threw at him without any reflection or asking or anything else was heartbreaking.
Well, so and you highlight actually another challenge. We are still a lot of the times shooting in the dark when it comes to mental health.
Yeah.
You know, with my own son, we started to recognize a problem when he was 6, and it wasn't until he was 12 that I feel like we actually got an appropriate diagnosis for him. And not for lack of caring.
Obviously, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And some really great doctors, some really well-intentioned school people, some that did some things that they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But well-intentioned at the very least, but we're still aiming in the dark. I mean, it's a field where even with the medication, if you put your child on medication, it's, well, we're not quite sure that this is going to help. And then it does help, but it reveals something else. And we didn't know that there was this under. When we limit access and you're told, okay, well, you can have 3 appointments.
Right.
Yeah.
You're never getting there.
No.
Well, at that point, we're talking about just it being guesswork in a white coat.
Well, that's exactly right.
With Emmett, it was teachers that were trying to be doctors. It's not like they didn't have social workers or nurses look at him. It was his third grade teacher saying you need to put him on depression and ADD medication because he's fidgety in class and unfocused. And like, you're not a doctor.
Well, and the tendency for teachers to do that in the mid to late 90s
yes.
is the reason why we had the ADHD
explosion
of Ritalin and the epidemic that we had of people who are on lifelong medications now is because teachers were pretending to be doctors for a long period of time, or at least trying to play one on TV.
They're just trying to help, I think. They're well-intentioned, like Daphna said, but they don't have the background or skill set, and if the parents don't know, the teacher seems like they probably have more of an idea than the parents do, so maybe they listen, and I mean, it's just...
It's definitely a challenge. I will say that I think that we are far more aware as a society today, including the teachers. So there's more referral, less diagnosis from teachers.
I would definitely agree with that.
And I will say over and over again, my son's teachers loved him dearly. They loved him. Yeah. He was a pain in their rump. But it was so clear how they communicated with me, how they communicated with him, but they just did not know what to do with him.
Right.
And for all of the effort in the world, I could never get him an appropriate IEP.
Wow.
And he is now entering high school without classroom skills. And that's a really tough place to be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I covered a ton of stuff in there, but from a legislative perspective, some of the highlights are: how do we get IEPs adhered to in prison, right? Which is a civil rights thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how do we make sure that that's happening? That's one. Two, how do we make access to IEPs for kids in our public schools or in any school, but public schools where it's a legal document, et cetera? How do we make that process more less cumbersome? It's exceptionally cumbersome, which is why it doesn't get done. And less fearful. I mean, teachers, to a certain extent, who administer the IEPs are afraid, well, if I identify something, then the school district has to pay for it. Right? So there's this little bit of a problem. Okay, so what if we made it possible for the school district to pay for it?
It's punitive if you point out a problem.
Right.
So if the dollars are there,
Then
it wouldn't be punitive.
Exactly.
It might even be, you know, potentially a race to the top kind of a situation where
exactly.
you say, we've got a pot of money. Let's identify where all of these things, where all of these potential issues may be. And the people who identify the issues the quickest, the best, or come up with the best solutions, they get first access.
Or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we talk about how that impacts the family, so what I higher level said was I want to see social workers in every grade level.
Yeah.
And that may be pie in the sky, but I got to start somewhere.
So I want to clarify clarification on that. Did you want that per school, school district, county?
Per school.
Per school.
Right. So my...
Across the table.
My, right. My, and this is my dream world. And if I can find the money, and if I could show that this is going to create a significant impact, then we have a possibility of doing it. So just recognize that I know, you know, where I'm speaking. But these social workers who I can identify what's going on with the kids because this is their training, can then communicate with families who until now are being told, you have a problem, kid.
Right.
No, you don't. You have a kid who operates differently.
Yeah.
So gearing this back to sort of the purely political for a second and the campaign, these are messages and ideas that I think a vast majority of voters in Adams County would understand and appreciate and get behind. So what is the plan for getting that message to them?
We are getting that message out at the doors, and that is a really the best way and the time-proven way of getting a message out. Like I mentioned to you, we have some of the communities we have include Aurora, and we have a pretty poverty-stricken, a significantly poverty-stricken part of Aurora. They don't have time to read mail. They don't have a home phone anymore. So we are going to the doors where we can have a conversation, and we need people to help us get to those doors. We have a lot of doors to get to. So when people open the door, it's less about me giving my platform and more about asking, what do you want from your next, I specifically say, you know, hi, I'm Daphna, I'm running for the House of Representatives, I would like to work for you, and I would like to know what issues you want your representative to work on in the next legislative session. And I generally get blank stares because, well, it's July and nobody's thinking about November yet. The average person, which none of you are, apparently thinks about politics like 5 minutes a year. Yeah. Yeah. So you people are not normal. So either. Just so we're clear.
Well, not only that, we but people. obviously, you know, even in Colorado, 95% of the political coverage that we get is about the presidential election.
That's right. Because I'm not buying radio or television airspace because that's insane, cost prohibitive. As it is, I have to raise too much money. But it is worth it to go to the effort to raise the money to be able to get stuff done in our community. I mean, that's it. So doors are the answer. And when they have no answer for what they want their next legislative, I say, may I share with you a little bit about some of the things that I'm working on? And then, you know, I explain to them, first of all, this is my first time. I've never run for office before. And second of all, I'm a member of the community just like they are. So while I come to the table with some issues I'd like to see solved in our state, my job is to listen to theirs. And right. So my home phone number, which is like, it's my cell because I don't have a home phone either, is on the card, as well as my website and my email. I'm entirely findable, and I will get through the website a couple of questions, and it always makes me really happy and giddy and kind of geeky. And there you have it.
Let me shift gears a little bit as well, because very important, obviously, a good local campaign starts by getting the message out to the community you're representing. But of course, state representatives vote on measures in the House that affect the entire state.
Yes.
As we know.
Basically just about to head there.
Right, right. Yeah. So for our folks, our people listening in Denver and Boulder and Grand Junction.
We don't have any listeners in the Springs. So.
we might be surprised. So, you know, if you're thinking, wow, this lady sounds great, but she's a District 30. That's got nothing to do with me. Well,
wrong.
Wrong. She definitely does. So thinking more on a macro state level, what are some things that you could see yourself really focusing on?
I wanted to ask specifically about your stance on Tabor.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, there is a ballot initiative that I'm blanking on the name of right now that one of you has to know, Colorado. It's an incredible initiative to de-Bruce.
Yeah.
Right. I hope that we can get a significant amount of voters behind it because, and while it is only a 10-year time out, it is time for us to figure out how to effectively dismantle. I mean, the challenge with talking about Tabor at the door,
right,
is the
boring
name. It's a great name. No.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a great name. Taxpayer Bill of Rights.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
A family name in Lower District Denver. It's a very famous name as well. So that it's kind of double shot there.
It's absolutely. Punch, absolutely. So. It absolutely is a 1-2 punch. However, when we are able to point out that we are 49th in the nation for school funding.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw U.S. News and World Report. Number one place to live, Denver, Colorado. Number five place to live, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Colorado is 49th.
3 years in a row. Best place to live, Fort Collins, Colorado.
49th. 49th in funding for schools.
Now,
that means if you're a teacher, and we have a teacher shortage, if you're a teacher and you want to get paid so much more money, just go to Kansas.
Yep. Well, bad example.
Maybe not Kansas.
Wyoming.
Okay. Literally any example other than Kansas would have been perfect.
Wyoming. But, yeah. Why is Kansas low also? No,
Sam Brownback has completely defunded education.
Got
there.
It.
It's
go to Wyoming.
It's a big deal.
Right.
But we border states where you can make far more money as a teacher than you can in Colorado. And it doesn't matter how beautiful our mountains are, how incredible our weather is, even though it's been a little hot this week. It does not matter if you cannot eat.
Right. Well, and I mean, there are some people that I have become friends with that are recent transplants that have seen what's been going on during this election cycle, or at least the last, we'd say, year and a half, in which marijuana's been legal. and they have been flabbergasted because they were like, it's whether or not they're weed smokers or not, they're like, well, at least a lot of this money is going to go to these really great causes, particularly education, but anything that's an overflow will go to, you know, this first, then the next thing, and there's kind of an allocation cycle. And the way that it turned out is we spent that money first, and then that money went into a pot, and then everyone had to vote on whether or not everyone got, what was it, $7.45
it was
or something
like
that? It was like $8 a person. Whether we all had to have a vote on whether we all got $8 a piece or not, or whether or not we funded Colorado schools for $8.5
well,
million.
And the
dollars.
Truth of the matter is it's supposed to go back to the taxpayers who paid it, so it's only the people who purchased marijuana who would be getting that refund.
But
if you want to get specific.
Well, no, and there's no way to determine that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Unless, well, probably because of audit trail requirements, because of the regulatory crap we put in place, you probably could do that.
No, you have to check ID, but you pay in cash,
you
and they don't
cash.
Take a copy.
Oh, yeah, of
ID,
course.
So
you have to pay in cash,
way.
So there's no way to know how much you bought while you were there.
No.
Unless you signed up for like a
loyalty
card or something.
Which, is the state voted the right way.
We did.
Well, no, we did, but the fact that was even a question
is ridiculous.
Yeah. And I'm speaking as a Coloradoan, and I think it's ridiculous, but I'm also saying that there have been a lot of people who are transplants where I've had to have way longer conversations than I should need to about state taxes with
them. Why is this a thing?
Because
what are we voting on? Why do I get $8? And I'm like, let's talk Tabor. It's super fun.
It's super fun. The best way to explain it is you have a bucket. That bucket has a line in it. As soon as your dollars go above that line, all that money is required to go back.
Yep.
And our bucket lines are set way too low for our population.
No, that's absolutely true. The way I explained it to my friend from out of state was, you remember that Sunny Delight commercial from 1987 or whatever, where the guy is a little kid is sitting with his brother, and they're sharing a glass of Sunny D, and they both have a straw, and one kid grabs it away, and he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna have my half," and then he drinks the whole thing, and then the kid says, "Hey, my half was at the hey, where's my half?" And he says, "My half was at the bottom."
Yep,
that's how Tabor works here.
Mm-hmm.
That's like
that's pretty good.
Day.
Well done.
Yeah, well done.
Told that story terribly, but
we should make a commercial.
No, we should play the commercial on the podcast.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, okay, so Tabor. So that's something that we would really like to work on.
Well, what else? Let's talk about...
I've been signing, or I have signed, a petition for the referendum for the death with dignity in Colorado.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is something that I'm super passionately in favor of.
Yep, and I see signature collectors... everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everywhere I'm going, they're there.
We signed it on the way to dinner.
Yeah. My birthday,
Yeah, I'm so pretty certain that'll make the ballot.
I think so, too. What's your position on that?
I believe in death with dignity.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm entirely positive that's going to make my job significantly more complicated, but I'm still totally
Tell
for
me
it.
Why. How is that
I'm,
making...
I'm ethically totally for it. I work in the field of organ and tissue donation,
mm-hmm.
And authorizations. If you think that talking about death panels with Obamacare was a problem, the idea that possibly we're killing people to take
their
organs.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. You have to want it. But
you have to want it, but we're going to get it. It's going to come at us.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So we already had that about 25 years ago. We had a significant group of people who were very against the idea that you would sign up to be an organ donor when you signed up to be a driver, when you got your driver's license. Because they were saying, you know, they're not going to try to save you. They're just going to save your stuff. If you want like the best example, go look at Monty Python and can we have your liver then skit. and that's the perfect example of their argument against it 20 years ago. Obviously that's fallen aside.
You don't really hear much about that.
No. And actually Colorado, I believe, is number 3 in the country for donor registries. We're at 68% of people who sign up for driver's license are organ
donors. Go Colorado.
Donors. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And everyone should be, obviously.
It's an issue we're
pretty passionate about. I would hate to have an argument thrown our way that says like doctors aren't going to try to save you. Because
they're gonna kill yourself because they want
and they're gonna let you. They're gonna declare you unable to be saved because, like, hey, there's good organs in there.
Just
that's kind of a no-brainer. But let's talk about some other state issues.
It's coming.
Obviously, you stand in opposition to Joanne Wynholtz and Klingenschmitt and these folks. what are some other pressing state issues that? Well, obviously, we want to flip the House, right? Because
The Senate.
The Senate. The Senate. We want to hold the House and flip the Senate.
Yes. Absolutely.
And
state-wise.
State-wise.
Right. So and you know that we want to do the opposite, but in Colorado,
know that statewide the Republicans have a one seat advantage in the Senate, and the Democrats have a 3-seat advantage in the House.
It's very, very close.
Colorado
is a swing state precisely because we pretty much run 30% Democrat, 30% Republican, 30% what we call unaffiliated, which is independent or whatever you want. So it's squarely a purple state. And we've been leaning more Democrat, but it's going to be close in every single race.
Yep. And House District 30 100% mirrors the state.
Yeah.
So it's not like Denver, which is has a high level of Democrats.
Right.
It's...
Well, your district is big and weirdly drawn.
Mm-hmm. Funny very, how that very works. Weirdly drawn.
Funny I know. How well, that works.
So another reason why we need to do this right now is we need to take this now so we can hold it in 2020. So when the census happens, we can un-gerrymander what has been done. Because your district is a perfect example of...
It's the weirdest.
It doesn't thing make any sense.
No, it's kind of funny. However, there are some really amazing things that are in House District 30. So I don't know if you've checked it out, but there's a new Stanley Marketplace that's going to open sometime. But a couple of guys put together what ultimately kind of models the Seattle Marketplace.
Oh, really?
And it is in House District 30.
What?
By like... It's the Clinton Street is here. I think it's Clinton Street. Clinton Street is here. And on the left side, that's not my district. On the right side, it is. And that's where Stanley Marketplace is.
Oh my God, that's
so
amazing.
It's just narrowly. So it's like one of those weird lines that I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And I can't wait till it opens. And I hope that it's open in time that we have our election night watch party there, because they have a couple of local breweries. And it's all local restaurants, and
that's
awesome. It's so cool.
So is the neighboring district that would be on the other side of the street Republican or Democrat controlled?
Democrat. It's Stapleton.
Okay.
Which is a heavy... Yeah. So it's the border of Stapleton. So I have the Aurora side. I don't have any Stapleton.
Okay.
But all of Aurora that's kind of weirdly mixed into Stapleton is our House district.
So a bet for you isn't necessarily... vying for we want to be on this side of the street versus the other side.
Right,
of the
exactly.
Street,
but. Although my our very close friends live 5 houses away from our district. It's very sad.
Oh,
no.
5 houses. I'm like, can you just like maybe move?
but
they don't want to. I think that's so rude. go figure, people. So there are lots of amazing things. Denver County Jail. Yes. Is in House District 30, which is exciting. Well, especially from a perspective of criminal justice reform. And
I'd rather it be in your district than someone else's.
Well, and there's
kind
a lot of
it's
things,
a passion.
It's not a terrible jail as far as jail mm-hmm. is concerned, but there's still a lot of things that need to be worked on there. I mean, a lot of things.
Yep.
Particularly, I think that needs to be probably broken up into a campus rather than one single facility. I would say the same thing about the Larimer County Jail. They're in Fort Collins. I don't know if you know this, but the one jail that they've got there, they've got like the sheriff's jail, which is a small jail cell area. But then like the Larimer County Jail is 10 years, 12 years people intermingling with 6 months people, intermingling with 1 month people, intermingling with overnight drunk tank people. And it's like, This is not good. This needs to be broken up into different facilities.
And it's the whole county, so it's a lot of different cities. And it's
And I would say the Denver jail needs to be done kind of the same way. I mean, there's a significant number of differentiations between the different groups of people who are incarcerated there. Not to mention the fact that I think most of them should not be incarcerated at all. But if you're going to be incarcerated, let's not throw you all into one.
Right.
Well, that's a good topic to maybe talk about some of your campaign goals or platforms in terms of criminal justice reform, statewide or for District 30?
Statewide.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, because any kind of justice reform is going to impact not only our little, you know, corner. Really, I think it's funny that Denver County Jail is in my district.
It is.
I'm certain that we don't have any control over what happens in there. It's got to be its little panacea of an island.
Right.
But we have to take a very serious look at how long we're putting people in jail for, what we're putting people in jail for, And are we evaluating mental illness? Are we jailing mental illness?
And are we jailing people of color at a much greater rate than not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so all of these things are things that we'll have to look at. We'll have to work with the district attorneys from around the state and try to figure out how do we make this a more just system. And please know that I am not an expert in this area, and I am studying it and learning it. It is a passion for me because to me, there's a lot of money that is spent putting people into jail. And are we putting the right people in jail? Are we caring for our community in the way that our community needs to be cared for? And what is the root of our numbers of people who are incarcerated?
When I was studying criminal justice in college, one of the things that one of my teachers said was, so there's really several different sections of criminal justice that you can focus on. You can focus on law enforcement, which was her focus, because she would say that's where it starts. So if we get law enforcement right, we don't have to worry about the rest of the process. Then the second part of the process is the judicial part, right? So if we get that right, then they fix the law enforcement problem, and then we don't have to deal with the rest of it. And then third part is the incarceration problem, which is how people are being treated in jails and solitary confinement. And so that's kind of the last ditch. When we got everything else wrong, we need to get that part at least right, because that's people's actual lives. And I think depending on where you come from, I'm sort of a all three, although I tend to agree with my professor that if we start with law enforcement and get that part right, we don't need to deal with the courts and we don't need to deal with the jails. We didn't arrest and put people in jail that didn't need to be there in the first place. But I think depending on where your perspective is on that kind of is reflective of how you think the problem should be dealt with.
Absolutely. And we do have to start with law enforcement.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
So I know that this has been a really hard week or two dealing with law enforcement issues. Is there anything that you're advocating for that we can do differently?
I don't feel like I'm in a place where I have ideas at this point.
Right. Just know that we need to talk about
it. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting to me to I have several friends who are law enforcement around the country, so they're not in Colorado.
Yeah.
High school friends who are law enforcement, whether they be police or in some case fire, so emergency personnel. And the conversation that's been happening on my Facebook page, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is a very racially diverse mm-hmm. community, but fair. Where the African American community is very clearly targeted. I mean,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And several of my friends who are police in Cincinnati are African Americans as well. And so to hear them talk about their experience right now, kissing their spouse and their children goodbye every morning because they don't know that they're coming home, trying to understand how to be part of the police force and to solve a problem from within. How do we start having this conversation really authentically as a country? Because we're afraid of it. I mean, quite frankly, it's, you know, I've been very silent on Facebook about this because I don't know where and when my voice is appropriate in this conversation.
Right.
And
we've also been very careful on this podcast because we're three white kids in a basement who have very strong views about
the world,
race and police, and not in a way you might think when you talk about three white kids in a basement. But
we don't
necessarily know that
both from law enforcement and
have you reached out to Terrence Carroll?
No,
so that's who you
okay.
We do have booked a couple of law enforcement officers, and we do have booked a couple of Black Lives Matter people as well. So
Terrence was Speaker of the House. African American and police officer.
Wow. Okay.
And take a peek at his Facebook. He's been posting about it eloquently. He's great. Very eloquent. He's also a minister.
Awesome. Okay.
Fabulous.
That's about going to wrap up this segment. I just wanted to give a couple closing thoughts. You know, as progressives, we talk a lot about being involved and who to support and to get involved at the state and local level and vote down ticket. And you meet a lot of people in politics, of various backgrounds, and they might be Democrats, they might be Republicans, but you know, people get into politics for all kinds of reasons. What we're really passionate about, and the people that we are passionate about supporting, are the people who not only support progressive policies, but really believe in it,
yeah,
and really care about it. And you're clearly somebody who really cares about it and gets it. And you know, yes, it's you're not running for president.
No,
this is actually not yet.
This is state rep in Colorado, and you happen to be running against someone we find very unctuous, who we would want defeated by anybody. But mm-hmm. what a wonderful treat it was to discover not only is the person who's trying to defeat the lady yeah. we're so passionate about defeating is a viable candidate, but really, really gets and believes all these embodies all these progressive ideals we care about. So well,
not just progressive ideals, but inclusivism. I mean, the person that yeah. we have been reviling against is because she is so
divisive
and hateful. And hateful. To hear somebody, you know, who is the other side is not just, you know, I've got different policy ideas, but to say, no, what I care about is the community in which I serve, not just a small portion of that community in which I serve, mm-hmm. has been a real treat, and we've Thank loved you. Having you here.
Thank you. It really is an honor to be with you, because like we said, not everyone is as passionate, but I think there are more people out there that are passionate than we know about, and yeah. you're going to bring them out.
Yeah.
Well, we're trying.
And the other thing I want to just really quickly close on is, if you guys are in the state of Colorado, which I know some of you, and I know that you are, Daphna needs help. She needs volunteers. She needs people to go knock on doors with her.
She
needs people to call, make phone calls, stuff envelopes, volunteer to get her elected. This is kind of a all hands on deck situation here. So we're encouraging you to reach out to her on Facebook. You can reach out to us at irreverenttestimony@gmail.com or at irreverentduo on Twitter. Daphna's very easy to find on the internet. Contact her through her website. Please help her out. Please volunteer.
Plug yourself. Go ahead.
DaphnaForColorado.com, spelled DaphnaForColorado.com.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
So do that for me, please.
It's Colorado all the way spelled out.
Colorado all the way spelled out.
Great. All right. That's about going to do it for this segment. Hopefully we're going to get maybe my friend Jeremiah to play a tune for us. And yeah. then we're going to talk about the news of the world and the world of American politics as that beat goes on. So
thank you so much for joining us, Daphna.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank Bye. You for being here.
Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Hello, welcome back to Reverend Testimony. My dear friend and musical partner, Jeremiah, is Hello. In town from San Antonio, and he's going to play us a tune called Dead Man.
Hope you guys like it. Thank you.
skies when my body has run out of time, when my mind has been finally set free, when my body is no concern to me. Until then, learn to love the burn of life's aches, pains, and hurts. Until then, learn to fight the urge to give in to life's curse. You will find me where the stars sleep in the day, when my body has finally filled its grave, when my mind has unloaded all its weight, when the day comes to call it my last day. Until then, learn to love the burn of life's aches, pains, and hurts. Until then, learn to fight the urge to give in to life's curse.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you.
God, that
much.
Was amazing. Thank you, Jeremiah.
Thank you.
Cool. You're more welcome to stick around and talk some politics with us.
I will.
Listen
in.
Whatever you want to do. So, man, now I just want to play music. I don't even want to talk about politics anymore.
I know.
But we have to.
Yes.
So, switch into politics real quick. But that, anyway, Jeremiah Bredvad of Teeth of Wolves. You can find that on teethofwolves.com.
If you're in the Denver area, there's going to be a gig.
Yes, at the
Corner Beats,
Thursday, July 21st at around 8 o'clock.
Yeah, so please come out for that. It
full
be
band.
Super fun. Full
yeah.
band. Yeah.
yeah, with me too.
Yeah, Travis on too. Bass. He'll be playing bass.
Yeah, if you want to put faces to the voices you've been hearing.
That's right. Come see us. I'll be there. Dana will be there.
I'll be there.
We'll be
Jeremiah
there.
Jeremiah will be there.
Jeremiah will be there.
Hopefully. Yeah, he'll be there. He better be there.
He better be.
There's no damn show.
All right, so what that was lovely with Daphna. Let's switch over to the shit show that is everything else going on in the world. Where do you want to start? Global, political?
Let's do global and work our way in.
Okay.
So last night, a deranged person got a hold of a, I guess the equivalent or close to an 18-wheeler and plowed through a group of civilians in Nice, France, killing at least 84
during Bastille Day.
Bastille
which
Day.
Is the French Independence Day. It's their 4th of July. And Nice is a resort town, essentially. It's a really incredibly beautiful part of France that is oceanside, and there's markets and cafes and coffee shops and things like that.
It's ironically spelled N-I-C-E.
Right.
Like Nice.
Yeah.
Like
so
nice.
All over Twitter, it's a, like, Nice attack, Nice tragedy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like...
So wow. this man came barreling through what's essentially like a boardwalk cafe market area where there were hundreds of families and children and people watching fireworks. And he drove this, what they call a lorry, is what I keep hearing, but a truck essentially, through these people. And he was swerving left and right to try to hit as many of them as possible. When it stopped, it was because there were police that shot through the windows and killed him. When they recovered the vehicle, they found grenades and guns. They found a passport from this man from, apparently he's from Tunis, Tunisia. We don't have any other information on him at this point other than that. but really gruesome and really yet another tragedy. The third in the last 18 months in France. The country is just absolutely reeling, as is the world again. We don't know what to call it yet. I'm not going to speculate on anything other than just it was really, the stories that are coming out of it are awful. Like, there's strollers that are crushed in the street, and I mean, it's just really awful. So,
yeah, it's going to be a time of unrest, unfortunately, is, and they're not sure of his ties to Islamic State or what have you, but there's probably some sort of connection they're figuring.
Yeah, no one's taking credit yet. No. But they just don't know. Well, they just don't know.
Right away, like right after it happened, the police called it an attack.
And a terrorist attack, yeah.
They called it a terrorist attack.
Yes, as well, did Obama.
Just by virtue of...
Well, I always think it's funny when they're like, he didn't call it a terrorist attack, or is it a terrorist attack?
In America?
Like, he terrorized the country of France by driving a truck through Nice on Bastille Day. I don't care what his motivations were. That's a terrorist attack, be it domestic, foreign, Islamic... Who cares? It's a terrorist attack because he terrorized the people of France and the world.
Well, what I was going to say is in America, there would be this whole call on whether or not someone would call it a terrorist attack or what we would specifically call it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in everywhere else in the world, they recognize that when an act of terror is enacted upon the people,
yes,
we call it a terrorist attack. We don't even need to know the circumstances yet. We know it's a terrorist attack.
We just don't know what.
Now we'll do an investigation as to what the motive behind it was.
Well, that's exactly where it leads into politics, and
yep.
If you have to put a name to it, yep. And say
if you don't say Islamic terrorism, then you're a sympathizer and all the nonsense that comes out of our country. Obama came out and said it was a terrorist attack as well, and that, you know, France is our oldest ally, and that we stand in support of them, and that's really all we know right now. But Jesus.
Yeah, it wasn't, there will be more.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing that is not just straight out of the news cycle that I'd like to comment on is I noticed that there's a lot of tragedy fatigue going on right now.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I saw, particularly with this attack on my Facebook feed, I saw a lot of people who were saying, like, oh, great, now we're just going to have everybody putting France flag filters back on their picture for a couple of weeks, and then we'll forget all about it. And I was really saddened to see that, because I think that we're not looking at the individual situations anymore. Now we're just sitting in a situation where...
Looking at the pop culture reactions?
Pop culture reactions, and so many things are happening so quickly and that are all so terrible that we all are just expected to deal with that. You know, the idea that a Facebook filter is something that is adequate to show your remorse is something that happened 6 months ago, and now the idea that even a Facebook filter is like viewed with this kind of
disdain.
That, like, oh yeah, you're gonna care for 6 weeks and then take that off and put up a new picture.
It's like, yeah, but what we don't even get 6 weeks anymore. We don't get 5 days. We don't get a day.
No, I mean,
it's tragedy every day.
The fatigue that we're feeling, the empathy fatigue that we're feeling in, I think particularly in America, although I think it has to
it's
be
it's happening
felt.
In France,
it's
too.
It's going to happen everywhere.
They talked about that on NPR, where there's almost this blasé reaction by a lot of the French at this point. It's like, what can we do?
I heard one of their correspondents talking about, she lives in Paris, and she was saying that, you know, the speculation was, oh, the French people were sort of on guard and they were afraid. And she said, that's not my experience at all. You know, Bastille Day is sort of a week-long celebration. And by the time we got to the 14th, everyone was like, man, if they were going to attack, they would have done it. People were kind of calm that day. And so it was particularly brutal for them in that sense. But yeah, I think that in places that have been affected by these things, their empathy fatigue is exactly the right word. And Dana, you know that term from work, right?
Yeah, no, we talk about it all the time because I work in death and dying on a daily basis, and we talk about, like, you know, we deal with 7 dead bodies a day, but you have to know that that dead body is somebody's son, somebody's brother, somebody's husband. Mother, sister, wife. Dealing with today's case.
Yeah.
Anyway, you have to, you know, understand at a certain point that when you deal with death and dying all the time, at a certain point you stop necessarily associating the individual rather than the decedent, and you have to stop and
take a step back,
take a beat, and know that was an actual individual. And right. I think that the world really needs to, you know, we all need to have a global therapy session, or as the Joker would say, you know, the world needs an enema. We need to sit down and really take a moment and figure out.
Well, let's bring our millennial angle to it, right? Because if this was 30 or 40 years ago, you would have heard about it maybe on the nightly news, if you watched the nightly news, and if you missed that, you might have heard about it around the water cooler the next day or in the newspaper. But now, in the Twitter age, in the social media age, you're bombarded with it.
Constantly.
Oh yeah,
constantly.
And we wouldn't have even known about the two black men that were murdered back in the day.
No.
We would never have come across anything. If you were a crime reporter in Baton Rouge, you may have heard of an incident, but it would never have made the papers.
Well, you'd get a quote from the cops.
Buried in the metro section, and who cares? Yeah. No one else would have ever known.
In 1954, you would have found out that somebody drove a truck through a street full of people in Paris? Or, I mean, in this case,
maybe a couple days later.
If you follow international news...
If you read that little blurb in the right-hand corner,
or happened to catch Walter Cronkite that night,
yeah,
that's right.
So, my question is, you know, are we naturally going to feel that empathy fatigue when literally everything in the world and the race for everybody to play reporter with it or give their twist on it, you're just bombarded with it?
Well, I actually want to take that into another corner, which is where I think some of our empathy fatigue comes from, is that. When we do things like Twitter, on my Twitter feed this morning was 82 dead in truck bombardment in Nice. Mm-hmm. And then the thing right below it is the second top story is Nicki Minaj had somebody who was in her venue grab her ass while she was giving a performance. And right below
that's big news too.
Well, yeah. And right below that is the Ghostbusters all-female reboot is getting unfair
criticism
from the men's rights activist movement. And those are treated as the three top stories. And I think where some of our empathy fatigue might come from is where we draw a false equivalency between those things, because those are the three top fucking stories, and those can't possibly be the three top stories.
Yeah, because they didn't even mention the Rogue One trailer that dropped today.
Or Pokemon Go. So... all of those things are trending topics, and those are what we're bombarded with all day, every day, the death of 82 people is the same as Nicki Minaj getting
You're saying
groped.
It's getting lumped in.
Well, it's getting lumped in.
As the same level of importance. You
know, the Ghostbusters trailer, or premiere. And, like, it just...
Yeah.
Like, it's not just fatigue, although I think we are feeling a significant amount of fatigue, as we were talking about before, but I think there's also a significant amount of... news overload, because we all are just hearing
overload,
just information overload, where like we can make a false equivalency between all of those things, where those are the top stories of the day.
Everybody asks what's trending.
Yeah,
back in the day, you would watch Walter Cronkite, and he would spend the hour talking about Nice and interviewing people that were there and making that the only story.
And they still
well, and he
do
was a
that,
gatekeeper.
But most people don't get their news that way anymore.
Right.
Well, and he was a gatekeeper. He would tell you not what's trending, but what should be fucking
important
to you.
Right.
And I think that while we all love Twitter and think like we can all decide what's important to us, when we start looking at the way Twitter actually works and say like what is the story that is going to be told to us based on our feeds are going to be, you know, I probably had three times more tweets the day before Donald Trump announced his VP candidate than the day
that he announced
his VP candidate.
Because
and then had two more times tweets about the fact that we already had called it.
But you know what?
Before he called it.
But you can pin that on Trump himself, because that is pretty much the way he communicates everything.
Well,
Twitter.
I mean, this is totally
a
total pivot
thing,
but I thought it was extraordinarily juvenile the way in which he said, you know, it was just telegraphed so hard that what he picked, who he was going to pick, which is Mike Pence, and then said immediately on Twitter, like, we haven't picked Mike Pence. Wait till tomorrow. You're going to see who we really picked.
Well, and then Nice happened, and he said, we're canceling it because I'm very emotional about what happened in France. And then he did it anyway on Friday, and he did it via tweet rather than press conference, which is unusual. His
and it was the same guy he said, no, I'm not going to pick that guy.
And then there was all this speculation.
Or at least don't speculate.
That he didn't really want Pence, was trying to back out with his campaign staff the day before because he was like, Twitter doesn't really like him. So, like, I don't know if I really want him. Is there a way I can get out of this? And they
so
were like, nope.
Are we just going to full on pivot because we haven't even gotten to Turkey
yet? Well,
nah, I mean, we're talking about
us,
it. So let's just.
Let us at least, before we pivot fully, just say our hearts and minds go out to everyone in France and in Nice.
Of course.
We feel you.
As much as we can. Yeah. We haven't had a truck yet plow down.
No, we have mess gunmen.
I just can't tell you how much 2016 has broken my fucking heart, and you are in my mind.
It's your fucking blows.
well said. And you're not one in a number of tragedies. We understand the singular effect that this is having on you, and we'll be following it. And we care and we feel you.
Well, before we get to Trump and Pence, let's talk about Turkey, because what happened tonight was really interesting.
No, that's
craziness.
There was an attempted military coup. We're not exactly sure the who, how, where, but there was an attempted military coup. And basically, it seems as though the people of Turkey took to the streets and said,
fuck no.
No.
We'd rather not.
No, yeah.
No military, no thank you.
And it seems now, and I haven't caught up with the latest news because it's happening so fast in the last couple hours, that they may have actually stopped the coup in its tracks.
No, it seems to be an anti-coup coup. Huh.
Yeah. They like tried
they
and then the people
the
were
TV
like,
stations and
no, exactly. Yeah, they, yeah. And there's some connection to an imam in Pennsylvania that
which
we're
is
learning
very
about.
Strange,
and I'm not going to talk about that too much because I don't know enough about it. This literally just happened. So we'll get an update next time or you can read the news.
Turkey's
but
Turkey's not some little country out east. This
no.
is a big NATO ally.
Yes. It's like one of our major allies in the Middle East.
Yeah.
They're one of the more democratic countries. They take in a shitload of refugees from Iraq and
Syria,
from Syria.
Well,
Syria.
And also a lot of them
countries.
Use that as a pit stop. I mean, a lot of the Turkish, quote unquote, I'm trying to make air quotes, refugees are not Turkish refugees. They're people who were coming
escaping
from Turkey.
Syria.
No, you know, there are no Turkish refugees. They don't flee Turkey. People come to Turkey as refugees from other Middle Eastern countries.
And Lou on the way to some other place.
Sure, and we are very thankful to them for that. There have been some problems, obviously, with the government and with there was that bombing at the airport.
Mm-hmm. Oh God,
which
that was awful.
That was one
of just
the things.
A couple weeks ago.
That was one of the things that the military was sort of
what
saying.
What does it say about us that that's a fucking footnote?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I know, right?
2016
I know.
Has been dog shit.
It is. It's garbage year. But that they were saying that the military, that's one of the reasons they think that they were using for the coup was that the government's sort of ignoring this stuff as terrorism and trying to say it doesn't have to do with the refugees and trying to say it's not really terrorism and it's lone gunman style stuff. And the military feels like the country's not being protected by its government. And then there's also some problems with the government being sort of aristocratic and not representative of the people and sort of nepotism and stuff like that's going on. But again, like there's
that.
So, well, it's not us. It's the military.
Well, that's probably how they justified. Well, then this is not the entire military. This is a faction of the
right.
military.
And they don't know how big even that
I was actually just
was
trying to throw a dropkick to Saudi Arabia because.
Right. Well, anyway, so that's the crazy craziness. It appears to be not
we'll know more tomorrow.
We're
a podcast, not NPR people.
Know that clearly we know that the prime minister tried to flee and go to Germany and Germany didn't want him. The reporting, and this is again the Twitter age, the reporting early in the night was that the coup was successful and it worked and
they took back the TV station and they
well I mean, this is similar to what happened in Egypt. There was a successful military coup in Egypt, not, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
3 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was during the entire spring, so
It was a little bit after.
After the spring. Yeah, but anyway, let's not get bogged down in the Arab Spring at this point.
Before we pivot entirely to American stuff, I want to just talk about general internet stuff, although this will talk about American stuff, but I mostly about internet stuff. There has been this long-standing thing about what will happen today, July 15th.
Do talk about this.
I'm lost.
So there is this internet rumor that the Black Lives Matter and
Anonymous,
and depending on who you ask, they're teaming up. We'll be hosting today, July 15th, a Day of Rage protest, where we are going to finally break our...
oppressor bonds or something.
Our ideal of doing peaceful protests and say, at least for one day, we're going to do one rageful protest, and then we'll go back to peaceful protests. Now, this has been repeated in 2013, 2014, and now 2016.
Only being reported on which sites?
Okay, so I don't have my list on me, but The Blaze, Breitbart, okay. Glenn Beck.
Enough said. So let's scare a bunch of white
gun holders weekly.
Conservative action.
So I heard about it at work because somebody said we might close the building down because all the government buildings are closing down because there's going to be all these riots tonight. No. They're organized riots. And so I contacted the Denver PD and said, what are we doing about the riots? And they're like, what riots? And I was like, the Day of Rage. And they're like, oh, that's a...
That's nonsense.
It's an internet meme.
And so then I went and looked it up on Snopes, and that's where I got the information that this exact same post, it's just a copy from 2013, 2014, and 2016 again.
How did I miss this? I guess I was paying attention to the real news.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I just heard about it from work because somebody was like, we're going to have to evacuate. And I was like, why?
What are you talking about?
And somebody said, well, the black people are rioting. And I was like, fuck yeah. And they were like, what?
I'll join them.
Where are we go?
We're downtown Denver. What black people?
It was Civic Center Park. They were like, the black people are meeting at Civic Center Park to have a riot, and I was like, when can I get off? I gotta go to Civic Center Park. That being aside, I looked it up. Snopes really tears it down. They said, like, the exact same post was in 2013, 2014, and now in 2016 with the same video from Anonymous. The only thing that's different is the year. Mm-hmm. Well, from quote-unquote Anonymous, if you've ever seen an Anonymous video, you know that they do the Guy Fawkes mask and they do like the black background and they say like, anonymous. Here's what's going to happen to you. Yeah. So it was phononymous. here's what I actually think happened. And this might be the same thing as like the liberal equivalent of a false flag thing.
Uh-huh.
But I think somebody, because everyone who was sharing this was a gun person. Is what we're talking about here is a bunch of people saying if we got a bunch of people to show up to say that we're going to a fake riot,
we could make an
then they could show
riot.
Up with guns and shoot the people who show up to the fake riot and say we were just stopping the riot. That's my
conspiracy theory.
That's my anti-Breitbart.
I think you just put way more thought into it than the originator.
They just went, I want to make white people scared of black people because we're too sympathetic to black people right now, so I'm going to make up a fake thing.
I'm going to make up a fake thing that
black people are going to riot because they're really violent animals, and I'm going to spread it all over conservative media and scare white people.
For one day.
And that'll be really fun.
Not only did you absolutely nail it, but I have a perfect example. I've got one person that I work with that is clearly a racist, who was saying that, like, whether this is fake or not, all we need is one person to show up to instigate it, and they better be white.
What?
What does that mean?
That means the white people show up with a gun to stop the black people who may be showing up with a gun. He's very racist.
Gross. Anyway, it's all bullshit. None of that happened,
anyway,
obviously.
Just so you know, there were not 37 cities that had the apocalypse today.
No, we just had real apocalypses.
We'll continue.
We actually had actual problems with people destroying cities, not made up fake
racist
anonymous
memes.
Well, speaking of fake racist memes, Donald Trump picked
Mike Pence
as his VP.
The original fake racist meme.
This guy. Okay, he's the governor of Indiana.
Yeah.
He's reviled in his own state. Mm-hmm. Remember back in the day when he was the first kind of trailblazer for this bullshit Religious Freedom Act,
mm-hmm.
where he was, they passed a law in Indiana
Wasn't
that allowed.
Long ago?
No.
No, it was 2 years ago. It was a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
businesses to discriminate against LGBT people on the basis of religious freedom. And the world kind of blew up at him, and a bunch of companies pulled out of Indiana, and a bunch of sports teams.
Hold on, we should say big companies.
Apple. A bunch of.
We don't need to list the big companies. We're saying like this was aimed at small business being able to exercise their freedom. When it comes to big business, they do not want to say that our headquarters is not going to be gay friendly.
Nobody wants a 3,000 employee campus
to not have a place where gay people can be.
What they specifically said was, we will not have our headquarters in a place where our employees are not safe.
Right.
And so we will not be headquartered there. Then there was supposed to be like some sports match thing, Trav, that was supposed to be there.
Yeah, I don't specifically remember what it was in Indiana.
But it cost them a lot of money and a lot of...
And Pence had to eventually back down.
He did, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it didn't
pass. Which Tony Perkins is still pissed about.
Of course he is, because he's a garbage person.
Well, at what point is Tony Perkins going to be calm?
He never again, because we're winning.
I hope so.
He sort of hates women, really, really, really hates ladies choosing things about their own bodies, defunded Planned Parenthood, signed a law that would require funerals and burials and or cremations for miscarriages or aborted fetuses. Just like we talked about last week in Texas, only that's actually a law in Indiana. So yay, Mike Pence. Hates the gays, hates women, xenophobic, homophobic, racist.
Didn't he kick Syrian children refugees
out
of Indiana?
Yeah, he was the first governor to deny Syrian refugees access to his state. Literally met them at the airport and turned them away, like children and families.
So
he's a great guy.
So my very first question is, what does Mike Pence buy Trump?
Mike Pence buys Trump a VP candidate.
What he does is, in his mind, he shores up the hard evangelical right, which he already had anyway.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, there might be some small question in his mind that people are going to question, you know, I used to be a Democrat, I used to contribute to Hillary Clinton, maybe. Right. But those aren't the people that we're talking about getting from that. Like, if we're really questioning whether or not Donald Trump wants to get rid of a woman's right to choose or execute gays.
This wasn't
or...
Donald Trump's choice. No. This was his handler's choice.
Yes.
His kids and
his campaign
Paul
staff,
Manafort and his campaign
the Republican
staff and
National
the RNC.
Committee. Like, yeah. Everybody wants this guy because he's a sort of, I mean, I don't even
he
know.
He wanted Gingrich or Christie, which are even dumber. But...
Call
oh, he wanted Gingrich because he thinks that he's still stuck in 1997.
Or Christie because Christie would have attacked Clinton every day.
I don't think he wanted Christie because Christie is just...
Hates him. Christie takes away the indictment gate. Right. Christie takes away the ammo against Hillary, which is why he can't have Christie.
Right.
Because Christie was actually indicted.
Yeah. Gingrich... he personally wasn't.
Well...
All of his campaign staff.
Right, but he's on his way.
My personal...
But see, you can't say anything about Hillary, though, if he's also maybe on his way.
Oh, sure, you could say it. It just comes
but
across
But then it comes back
disingenuous.
At you, and it's not good, so...
Yeah, no, my personal take, and I don't remember if it was on Sam B or if it was on The Daily Show, but I think he can't take Christie because there was this skit that was perfect that showed Chris Christie walking up to endorse him. And it had Sam from Quantum Leap jumping into him as he walked up to the mic, and he goes, "Oh boy,
that's pretty good." I thought you were going to say Sam from Game of Thrones and start fat shaming, but
no, I would never.
Okay. No, we don't do that.
Plus, he's getting svelte.
Is he?
No, but it doesn't matter. We don't fat shame.
Are you talking about Christie or Sam?
Anyway, Mike Pence is absolute garbage, but fits perfectly within the Trump campaign.
Does he really?
Well, they believe all the same shit. They spew all the same hatred and nonsense.
If we're going for the Westboro Baptist Church vote, which it seems like Trump is.
He's got that locked up.
No, it seems like he's trying to triple down on it. Like, anytime he's got an opportunity to talk shit about Hillary Clinton on policy, he won't do it. He just talks about how good he is
on evangelical values. Trump actually wants to be president.
Right. And
which I'm not sure.
The other thing is Mike Pence is reviled in his own state. So he doesn't really have much of a political career left. So it makes sense to me that he would give up.
Yeah,
now, he cannot run as he is up for re-election as governor this year.
And he can't run as governor.
He can't run as both. I think he knows he's going to lose as governor. He's got a good chance of losing, like, oh, fuck it, I'll just be the VP and lose that, and at least maybe I'll get a show on Fox News.
So, honestly, if he had picked anyone other than Mike Pence, my argument would have been, well, he couldn't have picked Christie because Christie's so reviled in his own state.
How are these his three finalists? I mean, I know nobody wants
the job.
Well, don't you think he would have gone something crazy mavericky, like another Sarah Palin, you know?
What are you going to get?
Is too reality TV.
What are you going to get?
Joni Ernst or Mia Love?
So she was on the list.
Christine O'Donnell?
At least on the short list. But Joni Ernst. No. Joni Ernst is a Tea Partier.
Yeah.
So is Mike Pence. He came in with the Tea Party generation.
But Joni Ernst is a latecomer Tea Partier.
She's speaking at the RNC.
She's a fucking loose hinge. Like, she doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about.
So is Trump! I mean, I guess maybe not.
He's not a loose cannon Tea Party, or he's a loose cannon fake Republican.
Well, maybe that was the thinking, at least with the rest of the campaign, was like, look, you know, McCain did the crazy maverick thing with Palin. It was a disaster. You have to bring in an old, legit white guy with white hair who's really super conservative.
I mean, there's absolutely no way There's no way they could re-Palin.
True.
No.
But if and when Hillary says, oh, yeah, you picked a boring, uninspiring white guy that isn't going to help you at all, wait till I pick Tim Kaine.
No!
No!
No,
no, and if she does that, I'm going to take 10% of my Hillary sticker off.
Who wants to watch a debate between Tim Kaine and Mike fucking Pence? That is...
I know, it's miserable.
And we're going to have to report on it, so for the love of Christ...
Hillary,
but he's a safe, milquetoast, unoffensive,
no.
He speaks Spanish.
I want to watch Elizabeth Warren attack Mike Pence. That's what I want to watch.
I want to watch Cory Booker take him to the mat.
Or even... Julian Castro.
I want to watch any of those three people talk to Mike Pence about literally anything on a debate. Stage.
George
that would
Carlin.
Be beautiful. Well, yeah.
I wish.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. But yeah. So I was a little surprised that these were the three finalists and that he picked Pence. And then, of course, he had a midnight panic and he said, wait, I don't really want this guy. No, you have to pick him. The leak's already out.
Yeah.
This
we can't
is the guy.
Undo it.
Well,
do
you think that's what happened?
Yes.
Because
yes.
I think
he had buyer's remorse.
Yes.
At the last
second.
He
didn't want to do it.
Well, I thought that the media coverage was fucking hilarious because. It was like, he's going to pick Mike Pence. It's basically already happening.
Well, they think that Pence leaked that to get him to make the decision because Pence had like a day to decide whether he was going to run for re-election as governor.
Well, right. So that's what I'm saying is when it got leaked to the press is when somebody from his staff said, we're having this meeting about how we suspend our campaign for the governorship or the gubernatorial campaign. And then that's when it got leaked. And that's why everyone said it's really well-sourced. And then Trump, predominantly via Twitter, but through all sorts of other areas, was like, hey, don't rush to judgment. Like, it could be anybody still.
We're postponing
like,
it now.
Like, please, the announcement's not till tomorrow.
But isn't that the crazy part?
And then the announcement was tomorrow. It's the same thing that everyone said the day before.
Now, look, granted, it's kind of academic now because of Nice, because of Turkey, because of a million other things. But, like, it's almost like Trump handled it in a way to make himself look as... weird and incompetent and as unhinged as possible.
Yes, the way that it was announced. I was reading an article in the Washington Post about this exactly, and they were saying the VP pick is one of the top three moments in the campaign that you get the whole news cycle. It's a big deal and it can be a big boost. And the Trump campaign, well, not the Trump campaign, let me back that up. Trump specifically on his own just botched the whole thing. I mean, they had no control over him. You don't announce your fucking VP over Twitter. You have a news conference and you bring the guy up and he gives a speech and you make the argument for why he's great.
And
it's a whole thing.
And you have your advance team push all these wonderful stories about why he's such a great pick.
And then you have a huge fundraising push after that.
Yeah,
and you send out the thing. Here's how great he is and send us some money. And all, there's a whole machination that goes
instead,
on.
Instead, you
VP
had this
pick.
Weird couple hours where he was not going to announce it.
And then
really
he was just like, fuck it on Twitter. It's Mike Pence. And you're like, what just happened right now?
Well,
like his campaign has to be
that
melting down. They've got to be losing their minds. They lost a whole news cycle where they could have had control. And he just
they would have lost it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just makes him look like just an unhinged lunatic. But he's looked like an unhinged lunatic for months and he's still only losing by 5 or 6.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I suggest that in 2020 we announce who the Republican nominee for vice president is going to be just via Pokemon Go, and we just replace everyone's face.
Well, it'll be all virtual reality.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It'll be Oculus Rift by then.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will just be walking off cliffs.
And all the Pokemon's faces are replaced with whoever the vice presidential thing is going
to
be.
You have to grab it.
Yeah, and you have to catch it, and then voting is solved. We did it. No voter ID needed.
Yay. Okay.
Closing thoughts on the world and Mike Pence and
I'm going to fucking kill myself.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not about Mike Pence, just the world in general.
I'm really uplifted by our conversation with Daphna, and I'm really energized by the idea of taking back our state houses and Congress and working down ballot. The presidential race right now is a absolute shit show, and I'm tired of it. And the convention's coming, and should we talk about what coverage we're going to have? Because the Republican convention starts Monday.
Well, we've got the RNC. I'm morbidly curious of what that's even going
to
look like.
Oh, we have to cover it, yeah.
Well, so we also should talk about there was this whole laundry list of these celebrities who were supposed to going to talk.
Yeah,
and they all came out today and said,
no, we're not doing that.
Tim Tebow's not talking, and Jack Nicklaus isn't going.
No.
And,
nobody. Everyone Trump promised was like, nah, no, I'm definitely not doing that.
Honestly, until Daphna confirmed that she was going to be on the show, I thought we were just run down left and right the Democratic platform and the Republican platform. Because
we'll get to that next episode.
I think we need to do that.
We do.
We will.
We need to have let's put a pin in that because I want to do exactly that.
I don't know that we needed to devote a whole show to
I'd like to do a special episode like Tuesday night or something and just, you know. Let's just read through it point for point and talk about it. Maybe not all the language, but just here's the idea and here's its counterpoint.
Well, I want to announce a couple things. First of all, we are going to have at least one correspondent at the Democratic National Convention, that being Courtland Coffey, and he'll send us some updates that we can either broadcast in real time on our YouTube channel or maybe while we're podcasting or something. We'll figure it out.
Uh-huh.
We may have a second one, too. Sarah Burris of Raw Story, who's a great writer, an excellent reporter.
Yeah.
Has
really
recently
excited.
Discovered the podcast. She's a big fan, and she's going to be on next Friday.
It's very exciting.
And we might be able to get her to do some live correspondence as well.
Awesome.
Which would be really cool.
And then
is she going to Cleveland, or is she going to...
No, this is DNC.
DNC.
Yeah. So we're also going to try to do a live podcast at Daphna's campaign kickoff barbecue.
Yes.
And kind of talk to some of her supporters and people in our community. So that'll be kind of a special episode that won't be like just a strictly Netroots one.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. So
lots.
Yeah.
Lots.
Yeah.
Jeremiah will be here next week, so maybe he'll do another song for
us. Yeah, maybe he will.
Also, if you're
we should be so lucky.
Rename all of your Pokemon Daphna.
And please do volunteer for her if you're in this area. Even if you don't live in her district, it's crucially important. If you don't live in this area, go find the progressive candidate that lives in your state that you can support and volunteer for. We need you on the ground.
That's about going to do it. Stay safe out there, people, and stay close to your friends and the people you care about and love. Scary, dangerous times. So enjoy life and be close to the people you care about. So stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Dana.
And Jeremiah's there in the corner. Just being cool.
Yeah.
As usual. All right.
We'll see you next week.
Sky.